シュデバヤ
オムナモバグバテバシュデバヤ
オムナモバグバテバシュデバヤ
イエ
イ
バイバグ
バタ
プロクタイエヴァイバガヴァタプロクタ
イエヴァイバガヴァタプロクタ
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 ウパヤ
ウパヤ
イ
ア
スマ
ー
ラブダイエ
ウ
パヤヒアスマラブダイエ
ウ
パヤヒアスマラブダイエYehi Bhagavata Prokta
Yehi Bhagavata Prokta
Upaya Hyatma Labdhaye
Upaya Hyatma Labdhaye
Sanja
Sanja
Tungsam
Tungsam
Avidusham
Avidusham
Sanja Tungsam Avidusham
Sanja Tungsam Avidusham
Anja Pungsam Avidusham
Anja Pungsam Avidusham
Vidhi
Bhagavatam
Hi Tan
Vidhi Bhagavatam
Hitam
Vidhi Bhagavatam
Hitam
Anja Pungsam Avidusham Anja
Pungsam Avidusham
Vidhi Bhagavatam
Hitam
Yevai Bhagavata Prokta
Yevai Bhagavata Prokta
Upaya Hyatma Labdhaye
Upaya Hyatma Labdhaye
Anja Pungsam Avidusham
Anja Pungsam Avidusham
Vidhi Bhagavatam
Hitam Vidhi Bhagavatam
Hitam Yevai Bhagavata Prokta
Yevai Bhagavata Prokta
Upaya Hyatma Labdhaye
Upaya Hyatma Labdhaye
Anja Pungsam Vidusham
Anja Pungsam Vidusham
Vidhi Bhagavatam
Hitam Vidhi Bhagavatam
Hitam Yevai Bhagavata Prokta
Yevai Bhagavata Prokta
Upaya Hyatma Labdhaye
Upaya Hyatma Labdhaye
Anja Pungsam Vidusham
Anja Pungsam Vidusham
Vidhi Bhagavatam Hitam
Vidhi Bhagavatam Hitam
Yea,
which
Vai,
indeed,
Bhagavata,
Bhagavata,
by the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Proktaha,
spoken,
Upayaha,
means,
he,
indeed,
Atmalabdhaye,
for realizing the Supreme Soul.
Anja,
Anja,
easily.
Pungsam,
Pungsam,
by persons.
Avidusham,
Avidusham,
less intelligent.
Vidhi,
Vidhi,
no.
Bhagavatam,
Bhagavatam,
to be Bhagavat Dharma.
He certainly.
Tan,
these. Translation. Even ignorant living entities can very easily come to know the Supreme Lord if they adopt those means prescribed by the Supreme Lord himself. The process recommended by the Lord is to be known as Bhagavat Dharma, or devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please repeat. Even ignorant living entities, can very easily come to know the Supreme Lord if they adopt those means prescribed by the Supreme Lord himself.
The process recommended by the Lord
is to be known as Bhagavat Dharma,
or devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
As interesting here that this word anja is used, or means easily. Because often it's considered that this process of devotional service, not often, but sometimes, you know, people consider it's very difficult. But actually the process of devotional service is very easy. If you compare it to some of the endeavors the materialists are prepared to go through just to enjoy their senses, it's just amazing what people will do sometimes just to gratify their senses. Like the whole materialistic society is simply about that one purpose. Everything that's going on in this world is simply about that one purpose, the living entity trying to gratify the senses. And it's quite amazing because they make such a huge endeavor and ultimately they fail. And yet simply by following the process of devotional service, it's not a very difficult thing. And ultimately, one who sincerely endeavors in the process of devotional service will succeed. That's it's quite an extraordinary thing. And it's said here that it says even ignorant living entities can easily come to know Krishna. It's translated here very easily. Come to know Krishna, the Supreme Lord, if they adopt those means prescribed by the Supreme Lord himself. As it says in the sixth canto, Dhamam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. I think it's the ninth chapter of the sixth canto. It's pointing out there that actually only religious principles, true religious principles, can only be given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any other method for trying to approach Krishna is actually not a valid method. Only means of that given by Krishna can actually help one can actually enable one to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see that the process given here, this is an interesting conversation that's going on here. Narad Muni, he actually spent most of his time living in the city of Dwarka because he was always hoping to catch a glimpse of Krishna. He was, because as we understand, Narad Muni is a great devotee of the Lord. And he was always hoping to catch a glimpse or to witness the activities. Even we see in the 10th canto, there's a description of how Narad Muni, he comes to Dwarka and he visits all the different palaces of Krishna. He goes around to the 16,108 palaces of Krishna. And in each one of these palaces, he's witnessing Krishna engaged in different activities. Now, of course, it's saying here that Narad Muni is practically living in Dwarka, but I guess, Krishna's got 16,108 palaces. If he's going to go and visit them all, it's going to take quite some time because there's so many palaces there. So it could be considered that he's spending most of his time there. Anyhow, so in one of the palaces, he visits Vasudev, the father of Krishna. And Vasudev he just discusses how he had the opportunity to worship Ananta. And when he had that opportunity, instead of asking him for liberation or something like that, pure devotional service, whatever, he simply asked him for a son that was, like Krishna. So Krishna agreed to appear as his son. So now he's lamenting to Narad Muni that actually I had the opportunity to ask him for anything, and all I did was ask for a son. So he's saying, this is obviously out of his natural humility, because in order for someone to have Krishna as their child means they're not an ordinary person. And he's saying that, I was overcome by the material energy, I was bewildered by Maya. But we can understand that this is Vasudeva's humility. It's not that he's actually bewildered by Maya. Someone who's bewildered by the material energy could not have Krishna as their son. In order for someone to have Krishna as their son means they're a greatly advanced devotee, means they're a very purified personality. And so we can understand if they are at all influenced by the Lord's energy, then it's Krishna's yogamaya potency that is, maybe creating a suitable environment for Krishna to appear or for Krishna's pastimes to manifest. As we see, in Krishna's pastimes, many, many various arrangements are made by yoga maya potency, just like we see, you know, this whole discussion of the Bhagavatam, you know, how Parikit Maharaj, you know, he was out hunting and he was thirsty, he became angry, so therefore, you know, he went to a hermitage and he asked the sage for water. The sage was in meditation and he became angry. But, Parikit Maharaj is not an ordinary personality. One name of Parikit Maharaj is Vishnu Ratan. It means he's always searching for Vishnu. Yeah? So we can understand that Parikit Maharaj is not an ordinary personality. Yet, how is it that someone who's not an ordinary personality becomes bewildered by anger, so much so that he commits an offensive act by putting a dead snake around the neck of a sadhu, around the neck of a sage? So that then the son comes and he sees this and he becomes very angry and he cursed the king to die within 7 days. Why did this happen? We can understand this was an arrangement of Krishna in order that the Bhagavatam could appear. And it's the same with Arjuna. You know, Arjuna, he's an eternally liberated personality. As Krishna says in the fourth chapter of the Gita, he says, many, many births both you and I have had in the past, you know, together. I can remember all of them, you cannot. So Krishna's explaining to Arjuna that we appear, you know, in so many different millenniums, I appear and you're always there with me. So we understand that Arjuna is Krishna's eternal associate. Yet he became bewildered. When he saw his relatives arrayed before him on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, ready, as Prabhupada said, in a martial spirit, ready to fight, then he became bewildered. How is it that such a great personality becomes bewildered? Ordinary persons cannot understand this, but the acharyas help us to understand, and they explain that this is going on by the arrangement of Krishna's internal potency, by the arrangement of yoga maya, in order that, in the case of Arjuna, Parikit Maharaj, that the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Srimad Bhagavad Gita could manifest. Or here, we see that this is... Vasudeva has become, you know, apparently bewildered in order that Krishna could appear and perform pastimes. And so we see all throughout the Bhagavatam, particularly in the 10th canto, many, many things are happening through these various pastimes here. It's simply Krishna making arrangements. Krishna doesn't even make the arrangement. He just has the desire and his energy makes the arrangement, so that he can manifest a particular pastime, a particular wonderful activity. So again, we see here that with Vasudeva, he's saying that, well, you know, I was just bewildered by the external potency, and I asked for a son. And then he's asking Narad Muni to describe to him about Krishna. And he actually asked him some specific questions. Where is it? I was reading before. Yeah, it talks about the demigod worship and explaining how it's just, you know, people after material desires. He's saying, I still wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's not you know, inquiring about, okay, what things can I do which will bring satisfaction to me? Because this is actually a very, sarkam. It's like there's some devotion. And we see in the Gita it describes different levels of devotional service. It talks about sarkam bhakti, particularly in the ninth chapter. Then later on it talks about what is called Nishkam Bhakti. So Sakam Bhakti means there's a mixture of material desires there. Yes, I want to serve Krishna, but I want to get some satisfaction out of it. Just as we see Krishna responds to Arjuna, he says, Yat Karosi Yadas Nasi Yashuhosi Dasi Yat Pashasi Kunte Yatat Kurusha Mana Pranam. So this is actually Sakam Bhakti. This is whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform. Because when we do these things, then generally, you know, they're done for us. They're done for our satisfaction. And so Krishna's saying, but you do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me, and in this way you become free from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious reactions. And he said, with your mind fixed on me, this principle of renunciation, you'll be liberated and thus you come to me. So Krishna's saying, go ahead and do the activities you want to do, but do it for me. And this way it's liberating. Yeah. But later on in the Gita, We see particularly in the 18th chapter, Manmana Bhagavat Bhakto Madhyati Namaskuru Mamaya Evaishi Satyante Pratichana Priyasame. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage to me, thus you will come to me without fail. And this is abandon all varieties of religion, surrender unto me, I'll deliver you from sinful activities, do not fear. So he's explaining to Arjuna what is called Naishkam. There's no material desire there, there's no personal motivation. So this is the same thing that's being presented here. You know, because he prefaces it by discussing about Vasudeva prefaces it by talking about the demigod worship and indicating that these are persons with material desires. They want something. They'll do worship. They'll perform some kind of dharma, some kind of religious duty, but with a personal motivation. And as Vasudeva points out, he says, the activities of demigods lead both to misery and happiness for living beings, but the activities of great saints like you have accepted the infallible Lord as their very sole result, only in happiness for all beings. And then he goes on to say, those who worship the demigods receive reciprocation from the demigods in a way just corresponding to the offering, which Krishna makes the same point in the, I believe it's the 7th chapter of the Gita. You know, he's saying, you know, kamaśtaiṣṭā hitāgyāna prabhādhyāna. Those with material desires, they worship the demigods, and according to their worship, they get the fruits. But they're only interested in the fruits, they're not really interested in the demigods. As long as the demigod gives them some fruit, then they'll worship that personality. So this is materially motivated worship. But what Vasudeva is presenting here is that he's just saying, what activity can I perform that pleases Krishna? That pleases the Supreme Personality of God, because that's his motivation. He just simply wants to satisfy the Supreme Lord. Now, even though he's a devotee who's very much in the Aishwarya realm, he's very much influenced by the opulent feature of the Supreme Lord, he still wants to perform activity that is satisfying to Krishna, which means that he has no personal motivation. And we see the residents of Vrindavan are also in this same category. Of course, their mood of worship is quite different. Their mood of worship is not Aishwarya, but Madhurya. And they don't actually understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, whereas Vasudeva is different, because if he's in the mood of Aishwarya, he's understanding who the Supreme Lord is, and he's understanding that if I worship the Lord, this is the best thing for me, etc. like that. Yet he's still, his approach here is what duties give pleasure to the Lord, because he's understanding that this is the highest duty of any person, as it mentions in the Samsiddhi Haritoshanam, in this, I think it's the second chapter of the first canto. There's two very interesting verses there, where it's being pointed out that, you know, those duties that are not directed at satisfying the Supreme Personality of God. It says, Shrama evihi kevalam. They're simply a useless waste of time. And then it says, but one's duties of vana and ashram, if they're directed to the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of God, it says, sam siddhi haritoshanam. This actually brings complete perfection, because haritoshanam, because it gives, like toshanam tushti, gives taste or pleasure to Krishna. Sam siddhi. So sam siddhi means perfection, and sam means complete. And it's just like some interesting word, sampradaya. You know what sampradaya means? Partially. It means completely giving the best. If you break it down into component words, it means, because daya means to like give, yeah? Daya baka means like receiving one's due desserts, like an inheritance. So sampradaya means to completely give the best. So it's very interesting. If you're connected with the sampradaya, you'll actually get the best, because you'll achieve Krishna consciousness. And it's the only means, as it points out, it says in the Padma Purana, sampradaya vihine ye mantraste nishpala mataha. Without being connected to a bona fide sampradaya, one's mantra or diksha produce no fruit. So it's interesting. Sampradaya means to completely give the best. And the ultimate fruit, what's that fruit? Love of Godhead, satisfaction of Krishna. So that's what Vasudeva is talking about here. He's saying, I wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is freed from all kinds of fear. This is actually many, many names of Krishna, but one of the names of Krishna means fear personified, is feared of him, is afraid of him. I can't remember the name. Abhaya. There's some verses in the fifth canto about Abhaya Mitram, about Lord Nrsingadev. They're very, I find them very complicated anyhow. So anyhow, we see that Vasudev, he's requesting Narad Muni, please, you give me that instruction. Tell me what is the duty I need to perform that will please Krishna. Now, how does Narad Muni answer? He says, well, I think. Doesn't do that. What's the traditional way of answering? He quotes authority. You know, and we see that any great personality, we see Srila Prabhupada, you read Prabhupada's books, what did he say? He says, Srila Sridhar Swami says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, you know, he's always quoting from authority. And it's very interesting because Srila Prabhupada, he said that the devotees should learn these books like the lawyers know the law books. And you see, you know, when a lawyer's in the court and he's got a hard case to argue, he's trying to establish a point and he's not doing very well, what do? They go back and they research all the previous case histories. Yeah? And they'll come across, and I forget the words they use, they've got precedents and all these different types of words they use. But they'll say, you know, in such and such a case, in such and such, you know, they quote this thing and they say, this happened and the decision was passed like this. Yeah? And this gives a lot of weight to their arguments because they're seeing that in the past, these decisions were made on the same circumstance. So we see here that Vasudeva is asking Narad Muni a question. And Narad Muni is not some ordinary personality. Narad Muni is a very, very elevated personality, a very, very great devotee of Krishna. A transcendental spaceman. He's so elevated that he can go anywhere. He can go anywhere in the material universe, and he can go anywhere in the spiritual universe. No limitation. He can go visit Krishna anytime he likes. Not a problem, you know. And he's always welcome. And, you know, he's one of the prominent persons in our sampradaya. So he's a very, very elevated personality. So he in himself, because he's accepted as a spiritual authority, is one of the Mahajans. Swayambhu Narada Shambhu. He's one of the Mahajans. So he's understood. And a Mahajan is a person who understands the spiritual process. As it says, Mahajani Yenikata Sapanta. The Mahajans, as it says, Dharmasya Tatvam Nihitam Guhayam. Mahajani Yerikata Sapanta. The truth of Dharma is actually established by the Mahajans. So he could have very easily just said, well, I say it's like this, I think it's like that. He could have just given his perspective on it, and it would have been accepted. But he doesn't do that. Because he's a great personality. He establishes the truth based on previous examples. Just like we see that Maharaj Nimi, he approached the Navi Yugendras. So Navi Yugendra is also not ordinary personalities, very, very elevated. You know, there's, you can read their names here, there's nine of them given. Javier and Kavi, I think Kavi Bhajan or something, like Avir Bhajan. Very, very, you know, you can hear songs about them and different places they're quoted here in the Bhagavatam and other scriptures. Very, very great personalities. So Narad Muni is talking about this exchange, and they were actually they were sons of Rishabdev. Rishabdev had 100 sons, and then 9 of those sons were given charge of the 9 islands of Bharat Bhumi. So it is Kavi, Javir, Antiriksha, Prabuddha, very, very well known, Pipalayana, Avihotra, also well known, Drumila, Chamasa is a rishi, and Karabhajan, also very well known. There's discussions of them in various parts of the Bhagavatam. So then, rather than just presenting his own opinion, then Narad Muni presented, well, you know, in a past age, this discussion took place, and this is what was said. This is what the Navi Yugendra said to Maharaj Nimi. So giving by quoting these personalities, he not only gives it validity, but he also adds to the whole by quoting from the Parampara, he's sort of adding to the whole strength and the substance and the significance of it all, but also he's giving not validity, but he's just sort of saying, it's sort of, because he's presenting the Parampara, it's showing the whole line and it's all going back to Krishna, is sort of the whole foundation of it is so substantial. And we see the same with our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Is if you go back in the beginning of the Gita, it gives the list of all the previous acharyas, etc. like that. And you see the many, many great Vaishnavas, many great personalities. So it gives validity and it gives weight to the whole presentation. Not that he's just presenting his opinion. Because someone in due course may say, well, that's just his opinion. But we can understand, no, it's not his opinion. He's quoting from this this previous discussion. Therefore, it's given more significance. And we see here that they're discussing the effectiveness of the process of devotional service, and that it's given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It makes it even more effective, because as we understand, if you want to approach a personality, the easiest way to approach that personality is to ask them, what can I do that will please you? What can I do in order to see you? You know, and we see that, just like Prabhupada would often give the example, if you want to approach a great personality, like a prime minister or someone, that person establishes a method to approach them. It's like, you know, if you want to go and see some rich man, then you have to make an appointment with their secretary, and you know, they book you into their diary and stuff like that. So they've established a system. So the process of devotional service is the system that's been established by Krishna in order to understand him. And as he says in the Gita, he says, Bhakti Mama Vijanati Yava Nyas Chasmitapataha, that only by the process of unalloyed devotional service can I be understood as I am. Only in this way can you approach me, Krishna says. He actually says this to Arjuna twice in the Gita. He doesn't give any, Prabhupada would sometimes say, Krishna doesn't say Jnana Mama Vijanati or Karma Mama Vijanati. He says, no, Bhakti Mama Vijanati. Only by the process of devotional service. And Krishna is the authority on the process of devotional service, because he is given the process of devotional service. So he's given us the easiest process. And as we see in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna's even pointing out there, actually Sukadeva Goswami is pointing out there, that according to the different ages, Krishna gives different processes. It says, Kriti yad jayato vishnam tretiyam yajato makam dvapare paritayayam kalodhad harikirtanat. That in different ages, Krishna has established meditation, deity worship, performance of yajnas, and chanting as the different ages. And in order to establish that process, he himself advents in a yuga avatar to present the yuga dharma. So he makes it so easy for us to approach him, just like in this age. It says, Kali Kale Nama Rupa Krishna Avatara Krishna Hoiti. I always mix the first half and the second half. It says, Kali Kale Nama Rupa Krishna Avatara. I can't remember it. It's saying that Kali Kale, in this age of Kali, Nama Rupa, the form of Krishna, or the form of the name, Nama Rupa, Krishna Avatar. This is the incarnation of Krishna. So in this age, the incarnation of Krishna is the holy name. And Lord Chaitanya himself, he advented to propagate the chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So we see in different ages, that different incarnations of Godhead appear to establish the Yuga Dharma. And Krishna says that Paratanaya Saranam Vinaschaya Chaduskritam Dharma Sangstapanathaya Sambhavam Yugi, to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So we see that there's so many incarnations of Krishna appear, millennium after millennium. It's described just like waves in the river. You go to the river, you see there's like wave after wave after wave after wave. It never ends, they just keep coming. So Krishna has unlimited incarnations, and he's saying the purpose is to, you know, one of the purposes is to re-establish the principles of religion, so that the living entities who are struggling in this material world have the opportunity to purify themselves and go back to Godhead. He's making so much facility for us to become purified, and return back to the spiritual world. And as it's saying here, very easily, even ignorant persons can very easily come to know the Supreme Lord if they adopt those means prescribed by the Supreme Lord himself. And we see that there are many, particularly in India, you don't see so much here, but particularly in India, there are many different, what they call, upasampradayas. So, as we're saying, sampradaya means to give the best, but upasampradaya means exactly the opposite. Yeah. So, these upasampradayas, they're actually giving false religious practices. Even in Bengal and Bihar, there's 13 main or 13 major upasampradayas, Al's and the Baal's and the Kati Bajas and the Saki Bekis and all different things like this. One of them called the Saki Bekis, they have very interesting practices. Is they accept that the love or the relationship the gopis have with Krishna is the highest. So they have something right. But their idea is they want to become gopis, so what they do is they dress up as gopis. And sometimes you see them, they come to our temples and they've got like 4 or 5 days growth and stuff like that, and they're like dressed up in saris and things. It's very, very interesting. Sometimes you see them, they roll on the ground, they try to imitate devotional ecstasies. They're thinking that by imitation they will become. If I imitate being a gopi. In essence, all these different things are just a pretense that they use as a guise to engage in illicit activities. Sometimes we hear that Prabhupada talks about different types of vairagya. You have Falgu vairagya and Smasan vairagya and all these different types of vairagya. So there's one vairagya which is called Markata vairagya, I think. The renunciation of the monkey. Yeah. So you see the monkey, right? He's presenting himself as being a great sadhu. He's sitting around naked, Did anyone ever see that thing? There's a movie that was quite popular in England some years ago. It was just showing nature. What was it called? I can't remember what it was called, but right at the start there was this monkey who was up in the Himalayas. No, it was, I can't remember what it was called. It was just one word was the title of it. I can't remember what it was called. Huh? Baraka, that's it, yeah, Baraka, yeah, that's what it was, yeah, thanks, bro. And anyhow, right at the start there was this monkey, and he was sitting in these, like, steaming lake in the Himalayas, and he looked like he was a sage in meditation. Yeah? So you see, and sometimes you see like that. They're looking very, very sort of wise and erudite and that. These monkeys, they're presenting themselves as being very, very renounced, and they're sitting around naked and that, but they have so many girlfriends, and they're having so much illicit sex. Yeah? So we see that there are those in the Dharma and in India and in different places like this, they're presenting themselves as being very, very elevated transcendentalists, but actually they're engaging in all sorts of illicit activities. And Prabhupada talks about all these different types of vairagya. It's quite interesting. When you analyze these different things, the smasan vairagya means the renunciation of the crematorium grounds. So that means someone, their relative has just died and they go to the crematorium grounds and burn their relatives and they're thinking, oh, very renounced, oh, this is the material world, it's just, it's all meaningless, all it ends, it just ends in ashes, it's like, I renounce all this. And as soon as they go down the road, it's like, they're back to their old activities, just like you see in Australia, Some people may go to a church on Sunday, and then the very next day, or even that very afternoon, they're down the hotel drinking alcohol and eating meat and swearing and so much, just being regular Australians. Yeah. So we see, that their religious endeavours are very, very temporary, very shallow. And these different vairagyas are like that. So we see, same with these different upasampradayas, is they're presenting themselves as being very, very elevated, or presenting themselves as being very, very spiritual. But if one analyzes the activity, then we see that actually that it's very shallow. And when I was in Brisbane, my wife and myself were in Brisbane for a couple of weeks, and there was a discussion came up in class, and devotees were asking about a particular thing. And then I was making the point, is you understand something by the symptoms. It's not that it's just some emotional feeling, well, I feel, you know, this, that, you know, I feel so-and-so is a very advanced devotee, I feel this, I feel that. That's nice to have some sentiment, but we need to understand the thing by the symptoms. So just like we see these different upper sampradayas, they're presenting themselves as being very great transcendentalists, but we need to analyze the symptoms. And just like we see here, Narad Muni, he's presenting, you know, factual information in order to be able to understand a conclusion. Isn't, you know, devotional service is a science. It's not just some sentimental, whimsical approach or some sentimental, whimsical understanding of the truth. No, it's a scientific process. And it's just like, you know, if you perform any scientific experiment, anyone who is a scientist knows that, you know, if, you know, under a certain environment, what they call STP, standard temperature and pressure, if you do this and you add this and you do this and this, this happens every time 100% if it's scientific. And if it's done under a certain environment. So in devotional service, it's exactly the same thing. It is a science. And if we practice the process of devotional service as is given by Krishna, which is what is being described here, then we will get the result without a fail. So these different persons, these different upper sampradayas, they present themselves as being very, very great transcendentalists, but if you analyze their activities, then you can see that they're actually not at all great transcendentalists, but they're actually debauchees. They engage in, you know, I'm not even sure if they marry, but I think they, you know, what we would call wife swapping. You know, they have these jamborees, particularly the Baals. They go to these together, they have these jamborees. You see the Baals, anyone who's been to Bengal, like especially around Gopanim, you'll see the Baals a lot. They come down and they're amazing bhajaneers and kirtaneers, just amazing. I mean, the way they sing can make you cry practically. They're such good bhajaneers. You know, and sometimes you'll see them, they'll come into Prabhupada's bhajan kutir, and you see, you know how they call the speakers, they hang the speakers down from the wires and they use the speakers as microphones, and it really sounds really bad sound, you know, but the quality of the singing is just amazing and the kirtans are just unbelievable. So generally speaking, they're Baals, and you can hear the kirtans going down all night long, down along Bhaktisiddhanta Road down towards the yoga pit. Oftentimes these are Baals. And it's kind of interesting, you know, they're engaging in this process of chanting and hearing and chanting, and they're having these like amazing, what we would consider to be ecstatic kirtans. And so what do they do after the kirtan? They have a cup of tea and a beedi. So we can see by the symptom. What is the symptom of chanting Hare Krishna? What is the symptom of one who's actually experiencing a taste in chanting Hare Krishna? Is they give up all material desires. It's science. But we see these persons are not giving up material desires. Therefore, we can see they're not practicing the process of devotional service properly. They're not following the rules and regulations of devotional service. So in order to achieve the desired outcome, we need to follow the process as it's given by in the Sampradaya, or given by the Acharyas, or given by Krishna. It's not some sentimental process. So if we, you know, it's important. That's why, you know, especially books like Nectar Devotion are very important, because in the Nectar Devotion, if you read the Nectar Devotion, you'll see that Rupa Goswami has very carefully analysed all the different stages of devotional service. Particularly, he's put a lot, you know, like the first 19 chapters are all about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Now, he's put a lot of importance on that, establishing that we need to go through the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti in order to attain Prem. It's not that we can just go straight to Prem, which we see is quite common. Especially in India, you'll see they have these things called Bhagavat Saptahas. And they believe that if they can just go to the Bhagavad Saptaha, they hear the discussion of Krishna's Rasa Leela for 7 days, then they'll become qualified to enter into these understandings. Again, a sentimental approach. But we see that Rupa Goswami, he's put a lot of endeavour into the Nectar Devotion to carefully analyse the different rasas. You know, to carefully analyse the different stages of devotional service, of different stages of development in devotional service, so that there need be no doubt about our understanding. We see the same with other acharyas, such as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He's very carefully analysed the stage of development from Shraddha to Prem in his Madhurya Kadambini. Very scientific analysis, and he discusses all the different symptoms that are there. So there need to be no doubt about one's advancement in devotional service. Because when people are in doubt, when people are in confusion, as it says Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatrika Vidhim Vida Aikantika Haram Bhakti Utpataya Iva Kalpate. It says that if one's, it's interesting the way Prabhupada translates, it's one's so-called devotional service, which is not according to the Shruti Smriti and the Puranas, according to, you know, the and the Pancharatras, you know, the Vedas, etc. like that. It's simply sentimentalism and causes nothing but disturbance to society. And there have been many personalities which have been perceived as being very, very advanced devotees. But we can actually see, in due course of time, they're not advanced devotees. They gather, and what happens is they gather many, many followers, and those followers become bewildered into thinking that this is a greatly advanced personality. And because they become bewildered, they practice devotional service, because generally when one's in a neophyte stage of devotional service, their practice is not solid, so they can become very easily affected by these things. Yeah? So when that such a person falls down or goes away or starts presenting some nonsense philosophy, they become bewildered, they become affected. So it's in our best interest to study the books that are given by the Acharyas so that we can clearly understand the process of devotional service that Krishna has given us. It's not given by anyone else. Yeah? The Acharyas are simply doing us the service of explaining the details so we can clearly understand where we are in devotional service, so we can clearly understand how to effectively practice the process of devotional service. There need be no doubt. If anyone has any doubt about the process of devotional service, it simply means they don't study these books. If you study the books, you will understand without a doubt. Krishna says, he says right in the seventh chapter, first verse, he says, just hear from me how by practicing this process of devotional service in full consciousness of me, you will attain me free from doubt. This devotion, if you have doubts, it means you're not effectively applying yourself. How can you have doubt about such a science? It's like, any scientist, if he does his experiment according to the formula, he will get the result. He has no doubt of that. And if there is some discrepancy, it means he hasn't practiced. So the same with devotional service. Rupa Goswami has explained, if you do this, you will achieve that. No doubt. So if you have a doubt, it means there's some lacking in our application. So by applying ourselves effectively to this process, we will achieve the goal. There's no doubt of this. Krishna says that. He says, well, you'll come to me free from doubt. He says this to Arjuna in so many places throughout the Gita, without a doubt you will achieve this, without a doubt you'll come to understand me. So just by applying ourselves effectively to this process, we will achieve. I'll just read some of this purport, because this is actually, this section here, this is leading up to a really, really nice part of the Bhagavatam called the Uddhava Gita. And there's several Gitas or songs in the Bhagavatam. There's the Gopi Gita as well, but in the Bhagavad Gita, then Krishna presented knowledge to Arjuna to a certain level, and we see here in the Uddhava Gita, then Krishna presents much more detailed information to Uddhava, and he wanted Uddhava to propagate that knowledge, as he wanted Arjuna to propagate that knowledge. So, and there's a discussion here which is in the purport, which is reference to the third canto. There's a purport in the third canto where Prabhupada explains this concept in more detail. There are many Vedic scriptures, such as Manusmita, that present standard injunctions for peaceful management of human society. Such Vedic society is based on the Varnashram system, which scientifically divides human society into four occupational divisions as well as four spiritual divisions. You notice that scientifically. It's a perfect system. Of course, it will never be implemented now because of lack of brahmanas, etc. But the Varnashram system is a perfect system which divides society into the four varnas and the four ashramas for the peaceful execution of life, so we can spend more time serving Krishna and meditating upon Krishna. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, however, knowledge that can bring one directly in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called Ati Rahasyam, or the most confidential knowledge. Ati Rahasyat Vat swamukhenaiva bhagavat vidusham api pungsang angja sukhenaivatma labdhyaye.
Bhagavad Dharma is so confidential that it is spoken by the Lord Himself. The essence of Bhagavad Dharma is given in Bhagavad Gita, wherein Krishna personally instructs Arjuna. Yet in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord will give instructions to Uddhava that surpass even the teachings given to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. As Srila Prabhupada has stated, undoubtedly Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord on the battle of Kurukshetra just to encourage Arjuna to fight. And yet to complete the transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord instructed Uddhava. The Lord wanted Uddhava to fulfill his mission and disseminate knowledge which he had not spoken even in Bhagavad Gita. And this is from the Bhagavatam purport 3.4.32. It's quite a nice purport. Similarly, it is understood that the knowledge that will be presented here by the nine Yogendras is not their personal concoction, but is authorized knowledge originally spoken by the Lord himself. So we see again this point of the parampara is being established. It's so important that we don't present, like I saw someone presenting a seminar recently, how to solve your various emotional issues based on, they were taking like these different sections of the Gita and establishing these conclusions about how to deal with emotions and stuff based on the Gita. Yet we don't see that any of the acharyas are presenting it like that. If you look at Baladev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who are the two prominent commentators on the Gita, we don't see it presented like that. It's better if we understand this science according to what is given by the acharyas, because then we'll actually get a deeper understanding. Of course, we can connect so many material things with this philosophy, but better to understand it as it is given by the acharyas, and that way we'll get a deeper and fuller understanding. We'll actually understand the purpose of the knowledge, which is to bring us closer to Krishna. It's not meant to solve our material problems. Of course it will solve our material problems, but it's not simply for that purpose. It is the only way to solve material problems, this philosophy, but that's not the only purpose. The purpose is to bring us closer to Krishna. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, the living entities, in the course of their wanderings throughout the cycle of birth and death, lose all trace of the personality of Godhead. Later on the 11th chapter, it says, Nadi avidya yuktasya purushasya vedasu. Because the living entity has been in ignorance since time immemorial, he is not capable of affecting his own self-realization. Not capable. And neither can others help him. Just like any other materialistic person, they can't help him. And it says, Matiya Krishna Parato Svatova. They do not know Krishna. They will not understand Krishna by their own endeavor, by the help of others, or by a combination of both. Other materialistic people cannot help a materialistic person to understand. It says, Adandaya Tandaya Upanina. Just as a blind person led by another blind person, they miss the right path and fall in the ditch. How can a blind person help another blind person to find the path? It's not possible, because they don't even know where the path is. They cannot see the path. So he says there must be some other person who is in factual knowledge of the Absolute Truth and who is able to impart this knowledge to them. This is the statement in the 11th canto. So that's the point that's being made here. But when they hear the eternal auspicious topics spoken by the Supreme Lord for their benefit and understand their eternal identities as spirit souls, the realized experience of being an eternal servant of Krishna becomes the basis of Bhagavad Dharma. In the soul's experience as a pure Vaishnava or servant of God, there is no consideration of being different from God or the same as God, nor is one interested in the kingdom of material sense gratification. The pure devotee simply perceives his particular devotional service to the Supreme Lord and sees himself as an individual part and parcel of the ultimate shelter. A pure devotee experiences that his very being is tied by ropes of loving devotion to the ultimate shelter himself in one of his direct personal expansions. And in such a perfect state of consciousness, the devotee can perceive the all-pervading, variegated forms of the Absolute Truth. It's a very nice point that's being made here. The pure Vaishnava. There's no consideration of being different from God or the same as God.
He doesn't consider he's one, doesn't consider he's God. Doesn't consider he's completely separate. Our philosophy is achinta bheda bheda tattva, simultaneously one and different. This is the Vaishnava understanding. We're not one, but we're not different. We have that uniqueness. Right? And there is no... nor is one interested in the kingdom of material sense gratification. Because that's what this whole world's about. It's simply about sense gratification. I was making that point in the beginning. And we see that as a result of their endeavors in sense gratification, there is so much suffering. Because the suffering is concomitant. You cannot have one without the other. Just as you cannot have heat without cold, because there's no meaning to one without the other. What's the meaning to up without down? It's meaningless. If there's just up, it means everything just goes up. No, there's no meaning to it. You can't have one without the other. So in this material world, because it's described as being the world of duality, in the spiritual realm it's not like that. You can have up only, or you can have only happiness and no suffering. It's possible, but not here, because this is the world of duality. So that you have happiness, it means they're concomitant. It means you cannot have one without that. There's concomitant suffering. It will come. So because people are endeavouring so enthusiastically to enjoy, then they're bringing upon themselves so much misery. And we see that, you know, all the time. I mean, every single day, just my wife and myself were walking in the city at 8 o'clock. What day was that? Last week? Friday, a week ago. And someone was run over by a bus. Yeah. That's just the reality of living in this material world. It happens every single day. Yeah. And yet so many people are just, what's that? Pashanapi na pashiti. Even though they're seeing, every day they're seeing so much suffering, so much misery, so much difficulty, still they're thinking, hope against hope, this won't happen to me. Yeah. I'll get this, I'll get the perfect job, I'll get, you know, whatever it is I'm hankering for. No one else is getting it, but I'll get it. They just don't see what's going on in this world. But you know, as Krishna says to Arjuna in the Gita, he says, armed with yoga, armed with knowledge, stand and fight. So understand what's going on here. Understand why it is the living entities are suffering this material world, because their aspiration is to enjoy. Their aspiration is to be the Lord and Master. And this is an artificial position, because that's Krishna's position. And as long as we're aspiring to take on these artificial positions, we will suffer. Okay, so I'll finish there. Any questions at all? This is challenging. How do you drink out of this without touching it? Not a Brahminical cup. Reminds me of when I was in Boy Scouts, actually. A big handle on it. Any questions at all?
No, you mentioned that those bhajaniyas and kirtaniyas that seem very ecstatic to them, and then after moksha, sit, tea and nika and whatever, because they chant, they were doing the chanting sentimentally. I always thought whether the chanting is sentimental, scientific, attentive, or anything, and then we just still have the potency to purify the jiva.
As it says, Bahu Jamma Kariyari Shavana Ketanam Tabutana Paya Krishna Paripinamidhana, that if one chants offensively, one may chant for many, many births, you'll not get the ultimate goal of the chanting. So because, you know, people like that, their approach is, it's not for achieving love of Godhead. They have some other motive. And because they have a motivation, it's offensive. They don't have faith that the holy name is the deliverer. They don't have faith that the holy name is non-different. As it says, Nama Chintamani Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vidyaha Puna Siddhya Nityamukta Binatvam Nama Namano. That it's non-different. Abhinatvam. It's non-different from Krishna. It is Krishna. It's the incarnation of Krishna in this age. They don't have that kind of faith. They don't have the faith, and this is Nama Chintamani Krishna, it's a transcendental touchstone. capable of delivering love of Godhead. They don't have that kind of faith. Therefore, which one is it? They're considering it's just like some, ordinary name. They're just like singing the kirtan. You travel around the trains in Bengal. You can hear these people on the trains. Sometimes such really nice kirtans. Years ago, I used to travel a lot on the trains, and sometimes the kirtans are just amazing. And to someone who doesn't know, you would think that these persons are experiencing some kind of taste from chanting Hare Krishna. But then if you see their symptoms, you see their activities, you'll see that actually, no, this is just, it's a show. It's all just a show. And the thing is, someone may be able to put a show on for some period of time. Someone may be able to present themselves to the general public as being a great devotee and for some period of time. But in due course of time, the truth becomes known. You can't pretend forever that you're a great Vaishnava. Bhajan Kore? There's a Bengali saying that one's bhajan and what is the other thing? Bhajan and something attested at the time of death? I can't remember what it is, but it states, Prabhupada will quote that sometimes, that these things are tested at the time of death. Where are you? Where's your consciousness at the time of death? And as Krishna says, Ante kala chamavayam smara mukta kareyavram. Whatever your consciousness you achieve at the moment of death, that's where you go in the next body, in the next life. So it's easy to present, especially some of these people are like professional kirtaniers. They're very, very expert musicians. It's just like in the recording industry, you have what they call session musicians, who are very, very expert. But they can never make it in a band because they don't really have that drive that makes them successful. And similarly, in devotional service, you can come across many, many persons who are very expert. I've been in Radha Damodar Mandir, and they're eager to get these people in to recite the Bhagavatam. Very expert reciters, and the way they chant the slokas and their memory is just amazing. Or even you look at people like Mahatma Gandhi. He would often be quoting from the Gita and talking about Gita, but he did that. He actually thought that Krishna was a mythical person. So you see these persons, they're very expert at the art of presentation. They can present the Gita very nicely, they can present the Bhagavatam and chant the slokas from the 10th canto very, very nicely and know them from memory. Yet do they accept the philosophy? Do they accept the practices which are inherent to the philosophy? And I think most of the time you'll find they don't. Therefore, and that's how we understand. They may be chanting what appears to be very, very ecstatically, but let's look at their practices over an extended period of time. Palena Parachiyate, you judge the thing by the result. And there is no result. Oftentimes they just wind up attracting women and things like that. There's no tangible spiritual result. And because they're chanting with an offensive mentality, the holy name is not really manifest there. It's just syllables. Anything else? Okay. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam Niki Samaveta Bhaktivin Niki.